You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Malls. Reminder before the show to make sure that you are subscribed in Apple Podcasts. And if you're new, welcome to Please Advise Nation. Our show only works with your participation, so call 323-450-7408 with your dilemmas and life questions. Again, that's 323-450-7408 or email askpleaseadvise@gmail.com with your voice notes or emails. Thank you and enjoy.
Please Advise, episode 192. That's so close to 200. We're really getting there, you guys.
Yeah.
It's me, Malls. Christina Lopez is here. And we also have return guest, Finnish dishwasher advocate, good friend of Mother May I Sleep With podcast, aging Chihuahua owner, sweet human, Ted Travelstead. Hi.
Hi.
I have something exciting to show you. Will you hold on?
Oh, yeah.
Ted, I actually think your voice is perfect for, like, ASMR.
Oh.
Like you could really be like a male star of ASMR.
Wow. I would do that.
Look at this.
I'm not what is this?
We gotta get speaking of ASMR. We gotta get you a big fuzzy mic, but
we just do an episode that's just ASMR and answer.
Finnish Powerballs now come. I guess so
what?
It's portion control, so you won't eat them as fast. But these Finnish power things now come in
individually wrapped.
I want to know why, but I love it.
Yeah.
It has to be for portion control. I feel like this is more likely. This could get handed out to children at Halloween.
Exactly.
You know?
It does look like a York peppermint.
It absolutely looks like a candy.
When you first said Finnish, I forgot for a second and was like,
no.
Okay, it was so a candy bar.
We do free advice.
Yeah. No, I remember now.
Yeah.
Because I was telling Julie, my wife, this morning about the dishwasher.
It's the best advice we've ever had on this podcast, which is like, if you've got that dishwasher leftover debris, you got to throw a Finnish in there. It's the only thing that really gets it done. I've completely changed dishwashing brands. No one guessed has had this effect on me ever in the history of Please Advise. So we did ask you to bring back another piece of free advice. Did you bring one today?
I have a couple things.
A couple tidbits off the top?
Yeah.
Okay. Ted's tidbits.
Tidbits. Let's get the tidbits out there, honey.
this isn't going to appeal to everyone, but if you are a Costco member.
Okay.
And you're not a vegetarian.
Okay.
Just be aware of the rotisserie chickens at Costco.
Unbelievable rotisserie chickens.
$4.99. Mm-hmm. Huge, very flavorful.
Is Costco tax free?
Oh, that's a good question, and I would have to check a receipt.
Because I think it might be, because I know that like when I first moved here,
I've been in a Costco like 2 times in my entire life.
So. I mean, food is tax free everywhere.
Right. Oh yeah, that's right. No, like the liquor is cheaper and the cigarettes too. Because I remember when I first moved here, my friend from college followed me out here and he was like, Malls, cigarettes are $20 a carton. at Costco. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, we could start a business. Like, because they were like maybe 6 months.
This is what I was talking about in the other episode. It's like, you're just always finding the fucking angle.
Well, I mean, I'm sitting there being like, I would absolutely buy a $5 pack of cigarettes. That's $10. Okay. That is $2 a pack. Are you kidding me? I can't even really do basic math. That is a good deal. So, no, maybe it's $4 a pack. I don't know. No, it's $2.
Still, what is it in New York now? It's like, what, 11 or something?
Yeah, and no. Here I mean, it's 12.
Even,
yeah.
Is it higher?
Yeah.
I remember when it was like going to be
like
$8 and I was
like,
New York is like, yeah, it's close to 20. Like, especially if you try to be convenient amazing. About it, it's so expensive. I remember like going back to my college, like for a reunion next week. And I remember when we were like, I guess, juniors, and one of the seniors from when I was a freshman came back. He was like grizzled and he'd been in New York for like 4 years. And he's like bumming cigs from all the freshmen. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, Molly, do you know what cigarettes cost in New York? And I was like, what? He's like, $10 million. And that was back when they were like $9. So yeah. It's like a huge, it's a fucked up life expense if you choose to take that
the
on.
The only reason I know is because, so my dad is a former bodega owner. And oh. So like anytime any sort of thing jumps up in price, whether it's like dairy or cigarettes, like he like informs me about it. He's like, yeah, I went to the store the other day, it's $15.98 now. Do you believe this?
Did he ever sell singles?
The gallon of milk, $4.98. How do people afford this? He's just like, that's most of my conversation with my dad.
That's really funny. I never thought of that.
On the prices.
That's great. Did he ever sell singles, like single cigarettes?
No. My dad was above board on his bodega operation.
Nice. Yeah.
It's wild to think about a young Christina running around in a bodega.
I know. Like, I would like make sandwiches.
Did you get all the free sodas you wanted?
So I didn't steal sodas, but like I made my own slushy combination okay. flavors, and that was nice. Always fun.
Yeah. Was it the one with the dog on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Slush puppy.
Yes.
Slush puppies are the best.
Yeah. So I would make, yeah, my tongue was always like a different shade during the summer because I was always just like drinking slush puppies.
Did you have a favorite flavor?
I liked mixing all of them. For some reason,
well,
that
suicide,
just tasted good.
The suicide's always good. The blue was my jam.
Oh, wow.
The blue's just so sour. It's so good.
Yeah.
What was your jam?
Ooh, man. It's bad. Green. I like, was there like a lime?
Yeah,
or
that
a
might
cherry.
Have been a green.
Yeah.
But then I also like the Slurpee flavor. I like cola Slurpee.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, I didn't have a Slurpee until I was a grown adult because I don't know why.
Yeah.
Hey, listen.
He sold it when I was like
slush puppy.
14, 13.
And then there's a Kmart one with the bear. What's that? The polar bear?
I've never actually been to a Kmart.
Okay.
We don't.
I know what you're
just,
talking about.
Yeah, I'm sure they're elsewhere, but yeah. I just remember at
it's
seeing,
like Freezy or something.
Oh, I see. The ones that they have at the movie theater.
Yeah.
I like to go when they just shut down the snack section and the ices are still cold. And on the way out, I'll pour myself half of a like kind of warmish icy. I like that. It's a little stealing for me.
Nice.
What other tips do you have? Ted Bits.
Well, first, where was the bodega? Can I
Yeah, it's still a bodega. We don't own it anymore, but it's if you're in Brooklyn, it's on the corner of 5th Avenue and 22nd Street.
No, is that Sunset Park?
No. Yeah, it's just like between Sunset Park and South Park Slope.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I grew up in Sunset Park.
Nah,
very
right.
good New York.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 20 years there. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Free advice. Well, you know, I have... I would say invest in an electric toothbrush.
Yeah.
Early.
Sonicare, early on. Baby.
I came on mine way too late. Not, I mean, it's great. I'm not in any mouth trouble, but like, I'm a very hard brusher, and so I have gum recession. And
I didn't know till it's too late. You can't just go at those things. Those gums, you got to be careful with them.
Yeah. And
I'd be like, I just like,
do you guys brush after every meal or just?
Sometimes, but usually just like,
no, I don't,
just like when I have to, like in the morning. Like, I didn't brush my teeth this morning.
I feel weird about
it, but I brushed them
brush
really intensely last night.
Yeah, I have a buddy whose dad was a dentist, and I think that influences his brushing at work after lunch. But I brush and floss at night, and then Sometimes in the morning I brush, but I have a very good routine, but I just don't do it after every meal.
Yeah. I'm vigorous with the floss. I hit the floss like twice a day. Nice. That I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to floss. It's just getting the habit of it.
And
it's
I can possibly clean my ears. Yeah.
Dental hygienist is like, oh, you've been flossing.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Like you don't want to get caught not flossing. Yeah. I'll tell you that. And I also feel like they can tell when you just floss like that day. I also don't kiss a lot of ass at the dentist. Like I don't like really like. Like, I brush my teeth before I go in, but I don't try to make up for a year of not taking care of myself in a day. People do that.
Because you're going to get bloody gums if you haven't flossed.
Yeah, and that's the tell, honey. That's
right off the bat.
It doesn't take Benson and Stabler to figure that one out.
No.
So, any more Ted bits?
Let's see. Hold on. I have a...
I miss Stabler.
I have...
I do, too.
I did write some stuff down here.
I mean, we've already got two. I feel like we're really
being greedy. I like that he wrote some stuff
down. Oh, you know, just like Mr. Clean Magic Erasers.
Oh, the best. Those are so good.
Very good for sneakers.
Really?
Yeah, if you want to clean the sides of your soles up. You know, if you're, I mean, I'm not precious about a lot of my sneakers. Like, but
it does feel nice though when you can like buff them up.
And, and then also, if you're looking into the reusable water containers and you're trying to decide between a Hydro Flask and a Yeti, they're both good. But here's the one big difference. The Hydro Flask lid covers the surface where you drink out of,
mm-hmm.
and the Yeti's doesn't. So if you're kind of a germophobic like me, probably going to lean toward the Hydro Flask because when you unscrew it, then it lets it covers that place where you put your mouth. Whereas otherwise, the Yeti, you're just putting it on the
side.
Just
free in the world.
Floating
you
the
always have a water bottle with you.
Yeah.
I've noticed that. Is that like a thing that you do everywhere or do you just do it when you know you're going to be sitting for a while?
I just do it here with you.
He bought the water bottle for his house.
I feel everyone I know has a Hydro Flask.
I keep it in the bush outside.
That's so funny. Wait, can I see?
It's a Hydro Flask, and
I feel like everyone has that brand, and I'm trying to figure out like why.
Well, it's pretty easy to find. Like they have them at Whole Foods. I ordered mine on Amazon. I don't really like the little Coca-Pelli dude. That's kind of annoying.
Yeah, that totally is a Coca-Pelli.
But like other than that, like I tell you, like I hand wash it, and I only drink water out of it, and it lasts forever. Like it's a decent, it's a cool thing. Otherwise, I'm just like. Using, you know, like plastic bottles.
I feel like all the bitches out there are using Swell. And I feel like that's something that's been hoisted upon women.
I feel like that's now the new thing.
But worse, even women, that's the one that they like market towards women. Like I still get ads for those all the time. Or they're popping up like SoulCycle will have them in a yellow. Mm. Like Swell has some sort of deal with like all the people that target women. And I'm saying
like Lululemon probably has a Swell shelf.
100%. And you know what? I'm here to say women, we deserve as much water, if not more. We probably biologically need more than men. We also need another hour of sleep a night. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah. So like the number 8 hours a night is actually because women need 9 and men need 7. And they averaged it out to 8.
This
so,
is very interesting. My wife needs 10. And it's like, no shame, dude. If you need 10, you get 10.
You develop.
So I will say, yes, that's probably true that women need more. I will also say that the whole frame of like, we need 8 hours of sleep started because of the Industrial Revolution.
Sure.
And because we would be working 9 to 5, once that was institutionalized across like workflow, then it's like, oh, you can only sleep this many hours to be productive and not kill yourself in an industrialized
and
job.
So they started to say the average American needs 8 hours of sleep.
It's like,
because that's the minimum.
Let's expect it. I forget what the actual, like, I learned this a long time ago, but basically our natural rhythm of sleep is like, you'll sleep for a couple hours and then like there's a break. You'll wake up.
Circadian rhythm thing.
You'll wake
right?
up.
Yeah.
And like some people had second dinners. Some people would like go out for the night and then come back and have their second like cycle of sleep.
Yeah.
And so like that actually lasted longer. But once we started getting on the schedule, the work schedule of 9 to 5, back in like the 1800s or whatever, that nature towards sleep completely changed. And now it's like, no, you only get 8 and it has to be between these hours because you work 9 to 5 always.
Well, it also explains like siesta culture. Like in Europe, yep, like whenever you go, like it's totally normal. I do love like a 3 to 5 nap. I love that.
Oh, I'm big on that.
Those are a good, personally, that's a good nap hour, like good nap times. I used to align it with Oprah. Wags, you and I are like coughing twins right now. What are you doing, buddy? No, he's not throwing up. It's like, I know what
he's
you're
got like something in the back.
Olive throat does that a lot.
Is it something kind of from like deep hacking within? Is it something from deep within? Want me to rub your tummy? Oh, that seems helpful. But yo, like, I went matched with a guy on Tinder once. I was like, it's like, what are your hours? Like, when do you want to go? He's like, oh, I actually have like really like weird hours. I'm like trying to get in touch with like my circadian rhythm. And so like, he's like, I'll sleep like 3-4 hours on and off, like every 4-7 hours. And I'm like, so like, when do you want to hang out? Cause like, and he's like, I don't know. Like, we'll just have to like seize. Like, I kind of like, you
I'll
know,
probably
just
be sleeping.
But I just like sleep as my body needs it. So I'm like awake most of the time, but then like I'll sleep for like 6 hours and then I'll wake up and then be awake for like a day. And I'm just like, I get that. I get like why we fuck with science. I get trying to mix it up, like Jack Dorsey's intermittent fasting, which I did for 5 years. It's called really bad anorexia. Like, that's exactly what that is. Mm. Eating one meal a day and then not eating all weekend. That's a problem. But yeah, people trying to like get back to our old like roots, whatever it is they think that is. And it's a really a rich person's game.
Yeah. And it's also like totally detrimental to like, they like teens. Teens need more sleep than anything, but we keep them on this 7 a.m. to like 3 p.m. like school schedule because it's more efficient for like bus times for kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's going against natural human,
human
behavior, yeah, nature. And it's all about, scheduling for bus. Everything's about scheduling for buses.
And it also has to do with like the invention of the light bulb.
Okay.
So like once we could have artificial light, we didn't need to go by like what was happening outside.
Yeah,
so I can just be like, fuck you all. I didn't invent the light bulb. I don't go to school. I'm sleeping 14 hours a fucking day.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, because where are we supposed to meet in the middle on this?
I don't know.
Because I agree. We all got trained. I think this is bullshit. I think the calendar is bullshit. I think it's all really weird. I think it's really weird that we just adopted this system and, like, all of this stuff is, like, layovers from when people didn't know how to act right.
Yeah.
But, like, how can we undo that? We can never undo that.
Yeah.
It's ingrained. Like, you don't even think about it.
Maybe it is. Maybe there is hope because, like, people are freelancing, more people are working from home.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we are more global in our approach to business. We're more so like there could be, you could have that person who like is representing the office in China and they work hours according to like the Hong Kong bureau. And
right,
so like they're, that might match their sleep schedule better.
Mm-hmm.
They might be night owls. So like, I don't know. I think there's possible that we could in the future maybe have jobs that align with our sleep, like how we want to operate.
Like me and Mark Wahlberg sort of like run on our own schedule where we wake up really early, yes, get to bed early.
Exactly.
I was up till 9:30 last night. I was like, honey, I got to go to bed. This is crazy.
Yeah. The gig economy, the whole idea of the gig economy and like people, I mean, I think it's going to lead to us working more than ever.
Right.
But yeah, it could be maybe the net positive would be that we would sleep on our own schedules.
Okay, but like think about this. Okay, here's an idea of how, let's go down back to the basics, bitch, on how time is really insignificant. Okay, so you have young nieces. You know those fucking blankets everyone puts their baby on and then they like circle the day and the month? Who says your baby's a week old? Who fucking says? It's not. Maybe that baby is actually 2 months old in its mind. And you're calling it a week? I think everyone's on a different developmental schedule. I think those blankets are sick. My kid won't have, I'm not having a child. but I will tell you, If I had a kid, it wouldn't live. I would not teach that child days of the week, months. I don't think it's relevant. I don't. Like, you can learn when you're five, like when that shit affects you. But until then, don't worry about numbers.
So your kid will never get Sunday anxiety?
No. No, not until
that's
Sunday.
That's a gift.
That's well, when they're five and they have to go to school, my imaginary child will have to learn about numbers. And that's going to be a brutal awakening. But I think until
sorry,
then.
Sorry, Oscar.
Yeah. Oscar's not my child. Yeah. But it's a girl. that would be like my take on it. It's my girl named Oscar. But yeah, I think numbers are like fucked up to put on to people. I do. A lot of like stress and emotional hardship is based on numbers. Like it all comes back to numbers, weight, finances,
age.
It all fucked. And you know what? Like, I'm not saying age ain't nothing but a number. Obviously, that's not fucking true. I do believe that there's like appropriateness and all of that stuff. But a lot of us get caught up in our head about stuff that like, who made that up? Who even made that up? Some caveman? Who invented numbers? Do we know?
Jim Numbers?
Mayans?
Jim Numbers. Yeah, Jim Numbers. Numbers.
I don't know a lot about
Mayans.
Him, but,
oh, yeah, the Mayans. Like, the Mayans
they came up with
fucked
zero.
Us.
No, I think they came up with the concept of zero. Right. I know that. I think. I don't know. I guess,
wow,
I should,
what a concept.
It shouldn't be like... It actually is. Like, if you think of nothing, I don't know.
Right. Like, I know, but that's like an acid idea, flashback.
The idea like, to, like, represent nothing.
Yeah. But what is nothing?
What? Yeah, exactly, Molly.
Yeah, and that's some fucking sick Mayan's perception of what nothing is. Some sick Mayan. I'm like, I'm going to get canceled. Let's some sick Mayan did an acid flashback and ruined our society.
Wags. Yeah, they actually did with, they were involved in calendars too.
Yeah, so. And you know what, Wags? That's your ancestry. And this is my gift back to the Mayans is I've taken in one of your angry little war dogs that bites me every day. But thanks for the numbers, really. Thanks for that, Mayans. Let's no, truly respect to Mayans. I've seen your ruins. They're beautiful. Let's take our calls. I have seen them.
Hey, Mall. This is at Motel Siren on everything. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. This is going to be a little bit of a long one, but I'll try to keep it succinct. I am finishing up my MFA in poetry, and I'm also a freelancer, and you know, I've written a little bit for like College Humor and Birth and Bee's Death, and you know, I have a poetry book coming out this year, and I have no idea what I'm doing with my life. I applied to 10 PhD in creative writing programs and did not get into a single one, and I feel like I am trapped in this small town with no friends. I mean, I have a boyfriend, but, you know, he wants to move to D.C., and everything just feels really weird and bleak, and I've applied to over 200 jobs. You know, I've taught for 3 years, and I'm applying to non-teaching gigs because I don't want to do that anymore. And I'm, like, just nothing's really biting back, and, I mean, some things are, but, like, they don't want to pay me enough, or I don't know. It's really, really hard, and I just, do you have any advice for a struggling writer in her 20s who needs a day job in order to eat? Please advise. Love you all so much. Thank you.
I mean, it sounds like you really don't have much to freak out about outside of like the job that you want isn't necessarily showing up. Like you have a lot of, you have a poetry book coming out and you've been published places.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's a lot. And I think you said a little bit like me sometimes when I go into therapy and I'm like, I've like fucking nothing. I don't do anything. I'm a loser. And my therapist is like, what have you done though? And I'm like, oh, this, and this, and this. This is like the stuff I've done in a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's a lot of stuff. She's like, you're not giving yourself credit for that. And I don't know if maybe like there's other ways that you're disorganized like mentally about your work or whatever, but maybe organizing that mentally and just in terms of like your success so far might help you figure out that like you do actually know what you're doing. And writing can be pretty feast or famine in particular, you know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, don't be afraid or ashamed to do any kind of job in your 20s while you're trying to, you know, work as a writer. You know, we all want to work in our field, but I mean, I came late to making a living as a writer, very late. I didn't get my first TV writing job until I was 45 years old. And, you know, but so I worked day jobs for years, most of them terrible. I was working in the Barnes & Noble and the Grove in West Hollywood at 38, you know, and just, yeah, it's humbling. But at the same time, you know, I was continuing to write, to submit, to do stuff with other people, whatever. It just, you know, it's, I mean, this sounds stupid, but it's like, you know, it's like that bus trip across the country, and you get on it, and like, you just stay on it, and eventually you'll get to that place, you know.
Right. But, and you're also very young.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like,
it's
not
like you're Jeffrey Owens, and it's like people are like, oh, it's so sad he works at Trader Joe's, which is not sad. We all know this. But like, you're 20 something, you live in DC. Like, people aren't like, oh, there's that promising writing girl working at Starbucks. How sad. Like, I don't think people are like that. And I think that that's a little bit what you might be caught up in is like, mm-hmm. You can't take a more menial job or whatever, something that's a little bit more. Honey, if I were you, if I worked at Chili's in Redlands and I got to clock out after my side work and drive home, I'd be so, do you hear me? I'm seriously, I daydream about this, like working at Hallmark and just being like, you know what? I'm going to help people pick out their cards and I'm going to go home and I'm not really going to think about Hallmark tonight. That sounds really nice and a really good opportunity.
It is a gift in some ways to not be accountable outside of your work. When working from home now, I feel very lucky to be able to do that. But at the same time, it's a struggle after so many years of working at regimented jobs because I feel like I have trouble turning off and not, you know, like I'm always working or
yeah.
I can't delineate, you know, or find times when
yeah, there's no off time.
But like to be able to like just go in, do a thing, clock out, be done with it. There's something to be said for that because then you can go and enter your creative space and do that on your off time or whatever.
I do wonder if she's had that at all, though, like because I can tell Christina's rearing up. I'll make a last point and then I'll let Christina go. My mom always would say something to me, which is like when you're a student, there's no time off, which is true, that you just feel guilt all the time. You also sound like you are pretty recently out of school. So like in a way, like this lifestyle that Ted and I are sort of like saying is like when you work at home, like you don't really ever, you're never not working. It's always around you. Mm-hmm. You might not have ever really had the feeling of just like what it's like to go in and pick up a paycheck and not think about it when you go home. I had an opportunity to do that like in college. Even when I was like editing and stuff out here, I'd go home and think about it. So that was different. But yeah, maybe you just need to see what that's like to have a gig where you have free time at the end of the day because you've probably lived in that 24-hour like tornado of work for a while anyway.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Christina?
I was going to say there's a couple points I wanted to hit. Like I think it's harder like nowadays in the age of social media when you're creative because you see and you're constantly bombarded by like writers or personality on Twitter, on Instagram, and you constantly see their bylines in a way that you might not have been able to like be bombarded in a way and do that comparison if it was before the digital age where it's like, oh, I didn't see their magazine. I didn't see it come out, but like everyone's sharing their link on Twitter and it's like, this person's really successful. You also don't know the other side of that person's life and like what's going on.
I thought everyone who had like all these people that were my peers that were getting like bylines everywhere, 30. I thought... Well, not even 30. I would get 30 under 30, but then I would see people I know like being able to write so much more passionate stuff and like stuff that they really cared about. And I always wonder, like, where do they find the time to do that? I'm like fucking busting my ass off to be on like to work hard enough so that not to be on a 30 under 30 list.
Right.
But like that's the result of my hard work while this person is able to do this whole thing. I didn't realize half those kids were fucking rich. Like, that's the thing is a lot of people that have that time, they come from money and they can write this luxurious longer piece that they can take time to research and like savor every moment of it because they're from money. They don't have to fucking worry about getting something out every week or whatever.
The other thing I will say is that, like, maybe they arrived at their journey and they know who they are now and they can have that strong voice and have that achievement. But who's to say what that's going to look like in 10 years versus, like, when you hit your stride in 10 years and what your art's going to look like then, maybe. You know, it's like a little bit of that. But the other thing I wanted to stress is that a lot of writers that you might know and love also, like, don't were having normal jobs for a very quote unquote normal jobs for a very long time. And it's something when you transition to your creativity to being your means for living, and that puts a completely different pressure on your creative juice, if you want to, like, put it that way. In a way that you need to be, like, emotionally prepared and, like, have honed in, tapped into your own creative forces and know so you can, like, live off that full time. Otherwise, it's really, really, really stressful and, like, almost untenable. So the one thing I would suggest is also to read a couple books. There's one called Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. She's the one who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. And she talks a lot about creativity and, like, losing the mojo and also, like, what the pressure is like to feel when you put, you know, your finances on being creative and being able to tap into that. And she,
real artists have day jobs too.
That was the other one. I was like, real artists have day jobs by Sarah Benincasa, who was, like, the guest. But the one thing I wanted to say before I pivoted off that was that, you know, Eat, Pray, Love was Elizabeth Gilbert's third book. Mm-hmm. And before then she had been, like, waitressing and doing other things for, like, 10 years while still always also publishing novels. But, you know, it took a while for her to, like, be able to just pursue her creative life full time.
There's a lot of narratives out there, too, that, like, counteract and validate each other a lot, too. Like, there's people who are like, I only want to hear from women who publish their first book after 45. And then people will be like, look at this 19-year-old. That's like, there's all these narratives that counteract each other about, like, what's bolder and braver and better and, like, what really makes success in an artist. And I think that that's all fucking bullshit. Like, I think that the business is a business thing, and, like, that will always change. But the artist, who you are as a person, whether when you get discovered, like, I don't know, I hate that. I hate, like, the idea of, like, you gotta hang in there because, like, you should, like, either way, whether you hit it early or you hit it late, if you care about it, you're gonna keep going.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, sometimes I get really caught up in, like, the idea of, like, not to, like, shit on your point, but, like, if Elizabeth Gilbert wasn't gonna write a third book, it was never going to be Eat, Pray, Love. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to have it in you to keep going and not, like, I don't know. I just don't know. I feel like
Yeah, but that was the thing, is that she kept going in this creative pursuit despite the fact that it hadn't panned out for two other books.
I think there's this other thing from the over 45 set that then, like, they think, like, oh, we're the real artists. We're the ones that really made it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's fine, because I'm closer to that age than not. But I also think that, like, and as someone, like, who was writing a lot in their 20s and around a lot in their 20s, I was like, oh, well, so basically you're just invalidating, like, my efforts and my success. And, like, I think that all of that needs to – I would love, like, that conversation to be taken off age. Again, a fake concept.
Yeah.
Literally, fuck you, Mayans. Like, right.
Well, yeah, I think it's back to the point where, like, oh, I've been doing this for a long time, so, like, my age experience means that I'm a real artist. Right. Whereas, like, people can mature. Like you were saying, like, that baby could be 2 months instead of a week.
Yeah, or someone could realize when they were, like, much later in life that this is what they wanted to do. And that doesn't mean that they were slaving away at the whole time, you know? Like, there's this misconception when it's like, she got her first book published at 58. Don't worry, guys. I'm like, well, maybe she started writing it at 55. Like, there's not, it's, is it that impressive? Like, I just think there's a weird narrative around it. Just, like, do you. I think
the narrative fits whatever the marketing element is.
Thank you. It's business.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like, I if somebody does something phenomenal in their 20s or in their 50s, right. I mean, I don't know. It's such a subjective thing. And it's also, everybody's lives are different. And, like, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to kind of pin down, like, what is the right way to do something
or what is more valid. Yeah. There was one more point that I wanted to make real quick, and that's because I actually do know poetry, social media very well because I work on a poetry podcast for my day job. It's called The Slow Down. It's 5 minutes. It's really good. You guys should check it out. But one of the things I do all day is look at poet Instagrams and poet social media accounts. And I actually, since she mentioned her social, I looked it up just to like kind of check it out. And I kind of want to encourage you, girl, like put yourself out there, put your work out there.
How many followers does she have?
I wasn't looking at followers. I was looking at whether or not she was putting her.
No, I know. But when you're saying put yourself out there, maybe she already is out there, girl.
Well, no, I mean, she's not putting her work out there.
Oh, so wait, here's the deal, though, with this poetry book. This is the other question.
Yeah.
Because I want to add something to all of this. If we found out this girl's dad had like 10 mil in the bank and was financing this year of her life, I think we would handle this call.
Followers.
I think we would handle this call very differently.
Yep.
So there's this thing. There's another marketing thing. Is like for every 19-year-old right out of like, you know, some Harvard kid that makes it, like, we also dislike him because his parents are rich. Or, like, you know, like, there's always, like, there's ways that we invalidate each other all the time that is so gross to me. Like, oh, but, like, they're this type of person or they're that type of person or this is their religion or they have held this belief back then or whatever. We have ways to invalidate each other all day, and I think it's so bogus. And, like, it's very, like, prevalent, I think, especially growing, like, working in comedy, like, a lot in my 20s, being around the UCB scene and everything. People are such haters on each other, man. Like, no matter what you do, just you have to be in this for love of the game, period. Go work at Chili's. Like, you really do have to, like, that's it. People are such haters, and
You also have to find, you have to find a source of happiness outside of what you do for work. If your happiness is directly linked to your work or what you do, then it's very hard. Like, you know, if you're always comparing yourself to other people or, like I got this great thing in my job and so I'm happy. And then, you know, cause that's, you're going to have hills and valleys, and like the valleys are really, really low if you don't have some other source of joy, you know, other than like, I accomplished this.
I don't know that I do. Like, I really don't. Like, my hobbies are other work.
Well, we talked about this. It's like, that's a part of our lives we both need to develop.
But, like, what else would I do?
Just joy.
Like, what else would I do?
You used to do tie-dyeing.
But that, like, takes 5 minutes.
But like, that's, like, a little thing that you can do that, like, you know.
You got a fresh stack right there, baby.
Yeah.
But if you're enjoying, like, the work.
Yeah.
Then that's a source of joy without it, without like,
not, it doesn't have
without
to be,
you
like,
being like
thing.
How well am I doing in this, or how much have I achieved, like,
right,
you know, it's not, it's just, I
it
just mean like
some people have I think I have a competitive attitude towards life, and I'm only competing with myself. Like, I just think that, like, even if it, like, it was a relationship or something, I'd want to be the best girlfriend. Or if it was like a lot of good, like a huge fucking group of big friends, which I like, is so not my personality anyway, I'd want to be the best friend out of that group. Like, I very much like don't have a normal. Just don't develop that. I also forgot what this question sort of was. Like, this is a lot of
She was
big,
just kind of like, what should I
what
do?
What should I do?
Work,
yeah, I'm having I'm the not. Same crisis, honey. Call back in 10 years. Like, I'll probably still be having it, and so will you. It's hard. I think everyone's always in a little bit of a crisis about
life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does it all mean?
And also, like, I don't know. And then I feel like people say stuff on their deathbed, and then that gets in our head. And I'm like, well, if I had to say something in one moment, it'd probably be pretty simple and positive too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wish I spent more time with my family. No, they probably like wish they didn't, like, you know, fucking steal $10,000 from their boss in 1987 and get fired, and the family had to sell the house.
I hate to think, like, it's like, oh, I wish I didn't work so much. But it's like, you need to pay the bills. Like, that's just the reality
absolutely.
Of being alive.
There's all people like come in with all these like things, and I've been guilty of like trying to put a bow on things too. Like, you know, we all do. Like, that's how we get through the day. But we've set up like so many sayings and ideas that contradict each other that we all try to live by simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And like, it just is, it's very confusing to me, you know, it's very confusing. 'Cause I agree with you. Like,
there should be things outside of work. And then I also believe in the idea of like, if you work with, like, if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I believe in that too. Like, there's just,
and that's, I think I just mean, don't hang your joy on like, especially in the entertainment industry, on like how well you're doing, you know, because you're constantly comparing yourself to other people. It's very easy in this town to like look and be like, oh, this person got a, you know, a show greenlit, or this person did this, or that, you know, and I, you know, and then just discount everything you're doing or whatever. Yeah. And so you just have to not like, there just has to be some other source of happiness. Is
yeah,
all I'm saying.
I think I
if
just
it's
got
the process of creating, or if it's working some other thing where you're enjoying the work. Like, it's just, yeah, I just don't mean, don't hang it on your self-esteem if your self-esteem is directly linked to like accomplishments.
Yeah. I don't know how I stopped like comparing myself to other people that way, but like, I just don't, it means nothing to me anymore. Like, I'm happy for someone if something good happens for them, but I don't ever look at something happening for another person and be like, fuck, like, what does that mean for me? Like, you know what I mean?
That's where does, awesome.
Where does this leave me? Like, that's never my reaction anymore.
It doesn't get you anywhere.
Yeah. And I also think that I've seen that like, you can have anything you want in a lot of ways, and it doesn't mean anything. Like, yeah. So many people I know, like, they get their show made and then they fucking become a dark alcoholic and like, it ruins their relationship.
Oh my gosh.
Like, all these things, like, really, like, it's, I've seen the best and worst things happen to people, and it works out in the end. I don't really ever feel like completely unoptimistic for anyone, which is maybe a place you want to get. Because you'll see, everyone fails and everyone yep. succeeds, and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't affect really the way anyone long term thinks about anyone or anything. So, yeah. You know, life is meaningless, and just remember that. I'm kidding. It's fine. You'll be fine. Call us back 323-450-7408. I'm going to take another call.
Yeah, I think
I'm not tracking. This is too existential for me. It's too. It is.
Hi, Mal, Christina, and guests. I'm calling for a little advice or your opinion. I am struggling with telling my husband that I am bisexual. And I don't think I've actually said that out loud before, but it's something that I have been keeping to myself for a while. And we've been married for 5 years, together for 10. I'm 30. He's 42. We met when I was 19, and this is just something that I've come to realize about myself. I never had the chance to really, I guess, experience that part of myself. So I just need a little bit of advice about all that, and mainly just talking to my husband about it. I have spoken to my therapist about it, but I'd like your opinion. Thanks. Please advise.
What do you think?
Congratulations. Welcome to the club, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, how did you tell your therapist if you were bisexual if this was your first time saying you were bisexual? Maybe this is a fucking prank.
Maybe she
call.
Just said,
do you think
like,
this is a prank?
Maybe she just said, like, I think I'm into more than just men. I might be into women.
Right, right, right.
She could have written it on a piece of paper and
right.
slipped
she,
it to her therapist.
Good technicality. Yeah. You're yeah. right.
Maybe she was too God. Upset to say it out loud. In the
therapist she did sign maybe language. Put I think, words in her mouth.
Yeah.
I think it's also like, I might be bisexual instead of saying like, I am a bisexual is completely...
Right.
There's a mental shift that happens also emotionally.
True.
In your brain, having gone through that experience. So congratulations on figuring that out.
Yeah, that's
it
true.
Happens,
yeah.
You know, I was like around 30 when I started like affirming it publicly. I think I was like 27 when I admitted it to myself. So, like, I kind of get where you're coming from. I understand that's, like, it's a good way to get to know yourself, I guess, at 30.
You know, why not? And I think the main complication here is the marriage aspect for her.
Right, and I will also say that, like, you can never sleep with a woman and still be bisexual.
Sure.
Like, that's, you don't need that confirmation if that's something that, you know, I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Especially, I think how you tell your husband is based on how you think this will affect your marriage.
I was exactly. wondering about that. I was wondering, does she need to know her desired outcome
to before she goes
I think
and tells
so.
Him?
I will tell you the reason why I think so is because it sounds like there's a reason why she's afraid to say this. And I think it's probably because her husband would probably fear that this would mean that they now are in an open relationship or in a different situation, right?
I can say that as someone who is bisexual, I think the fear that I've had in the past is people that I've been in relationships thinking that I won't be faithful to them because I'm open to this whole other gender, rather than like, even if I was a heterosexual, like, why wouldn't you worry about me looking at other men?
Right. It's yeah, like, you'll it plow like anything anytime. Yeah. Like, that's the attitude, I think, yeah. with bisexual people. Yeah, people are not, like, oh, they'll fuck anything.
And it's not like, oh, I just want all the things yeah. all the time. Yeah. That's like not, no.
Yeah.
It's like, if you already have a level of monogamy or trust in your relationship, yeah. why would this change that? You know, yeah. unless you're wanting to experience something that you haven't before.
Yeah. I'd say come to the table with some solid ideas. Like, I wouldn't show up empty-handed and be like, hey, I'm bisexual, I'm going to throw this on the table and like, let's figure this out together. Like, I would definitely try and form a thesis and be like, this is what I am. I don't know how that's going to show up, but I do know that like, you are a participant, and like, whether like, this is a part of a conversation with us. Yeah. Like, that's a good way to start. Maybe you want, you know, another gross thing that came to mind is like, how many husbands be like, oh yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a big common reaction with guys is to be like, fuck yeah. Like, now I'm having threesomes all the time. Like, if that's probably not what this looks like for you.
Yeah. By the way, straight guys, you could always have threesomes if another man is.
Right. Sure. Maybe sure. Sure. That, sure. Guys. Yeah. There's
if
that.
If you want threesomes so bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't think it's required of you, but if I personally as a Capricorn were to like have this conversation, I think also this happens a lot. Like, there's probably people in relationships who realize this every day and there always have been for all of time. Just now is a different way to act on it. Like, there's a different conversation about it in the universe. I mean, I don't think this is a bad thing, but I do think it's something that needs to be navigated for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's sensitive. I think I would be, if I were to be honest, if I was married to someone for a while and then he told me that he realized that he had a desire towards men that I never knew about, and it wouldn't change the way I felt, but I would definitely think that I would have some insecurity around
that's
it.
That's completely understandable.
You know,
yeah.
And I think that might be a controversial like thing to say, because I think everyone's supposed to just be like, yeah, whatever's fine now. But like, when you enter marriage, no matter what, and if you are thinking of like exploring outside of your marriage, that is a sensitive subject.
Yeah.
If I was with a guy who just said to me, I want to be open after all these years, and I know that that's not necessarily what this means to you, but if that is the case, I would handle with care. And I would also want to make sure that like my husband wasn't one of those guys. It's like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll leave my wife hooks up with chicks. Like,
yeah, and I mean, the other thing is that she's with him since she was 19 years old. And yeah. So she really didn't get the opportunity to explore sexuality. And who knows, like, it might be because she's coming at it this late. She might have never explored it in
Doggy,
her 20s.
Does that mean he had 12 years on her when she was 19?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't like this guy. Sorry, I think you gotta let the husband go. I don't know.
I wasn't going to bring that into it.
You were 19 when you got with this. What was he? 30 something? Oh, girl. No, I don't know. I mean, that's fine.
Look, it's hard to say.
It's hard to say.
I know, because when I was doing the math, I I was like, wait, I'm 32 now. Like, would
it's
I date
possible.
A 19-year-old? I don't think I would. But
I mean,
absolutely not. Marry a 19-year-old. Like,
they were 20, but she was 20. But yeah. It was a year later.
Like, that's a big, you know, that's a big thing. Like, if I got married at 19, I'm sure that I would have all sorts of realizations about myself in the process. I'm frankly proud of them for making it this long.
Yeah.
Yeah, being married at 19 and then being with somebody who's 12 years older, who has probably shaped, I mean, I obviously don't know either of them, but there's the potential there, just as an outside observer, of a power dynamic that's very specific with a man that's 12 years older than a woman who is kind of influencing how you think about yourself and about the dynamics of a relationship. And so that may, I can see why you might not, that you might repress or not even just think about your own sexuality in the terms that you have now or have come to, and why that might be hard to share within the dynamics of this particular relationship.
Truly. And but here's another question is like, what does the therapist say about your relationship period? Like, because that would be interesting to know, like, what the overall take is on the marriage. Like, is the marriage really strong and healthy? And then this is just some, like, bonus information.
Yeah, and this is something you can kind of, like, work with your therapist on and how you were, like, your approach for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I do think it's interesting that she goes to therapy for this and is asking us. And, like, oh, by the way, please ask us anything. We're, like, we're more than happy to, like, field any questions. But I wonder if the therapist – what the therapist's advice was on this and like what she knows about the marriage that we maybe don't, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, just, you know, therapists can tend to have a very specific language and talk within a very specific framework. And maybe asking this forum, you know, is a just a different kind of more, you know, casual wisdom, you know, which is good. And people want to get all sorts of perspectives.
My therapist is real rock and roll. She's real loose. So we speak pretty.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah, we speak pretty casually. So it's been a long time since I've had someone that's been technical with me, and I hated it.
I mean,
you're a loser. Like, I don't want to tell you things.
I do want to touch, like, as a married man and as a straight married man, if your partner came to you and was like, "Hey, I'm bisexual," like, or do you have advice on how she should maybe navigate this?
I mean, I think what both of you have been saying, just, you know, having kind of
you've been in a relationship for a while.
Oh, I'm married. Oh, okay. And yeah, no, I'm married and I've for 18 years. And so if my wife came to me and said that she was bisexual, it would.
So sorry. I just feel so weird that like this is a real person. I'm so sorry. But continue. It just is. I'm sorry. I don't know why this is funny to me. Keep going.
I think it would just make me reevaluate some things. But not, it's just like if my wife came to me with anything kind of deep seated that she hadn't shared, because we're very close and we've been together for so long, it would make me kind of reevaluate certain things within our relationship. I don't think that I would be, I mean,
good point, Ted. Like sometimes when someone's not telling you something so basic, it's like, whoa, I had a totally different basis for the honesty level we came in on.
I mean, but it's not basic. Like there is some really like things you have to unlearn to like tackle that part of yourself.
I don't mean it would make me reevaluate like my trust in her.
Right? Wait, you guys talk like all the time, right? Is that what you're saying? Like you guys talk so frequently that you would be surprised if something came out?
This is something that's deep seated. So it's not like, you know, I had a fender bender and I didn't tell you that, like, you know, like at all. Like, I understand that it's like, you know, so it's not like it would make me reevaluate my trust in her. It would just make me reevaluate the dynamics of a relationship. And right. So I think that like, it's just a sensitive topic, like I'd be thrilled if it was something that was like, you know, gave her a better sense of herself,
right?
Or and I wouldn't, me personally and the relationship I'm in, I wouldn't intimidate me or make me feel like, oh no, I've got anything that could make my wife like happier and feel better about herself, I think is only going to help a relationship in the long run. So I would just say it's a bit of a weighty issue and a bit of a sensitive topic, but I don't think it doesn't feel like a confessional thing. It feels more like just like, I want to share this with you because it's who I am.
True. Yeah. See, that's the other thing. I think a lot of people would almost approach this like, I have something to tell you that is off-putting or a secret that I've been like intentionally hid from you and I have to confess this. Like, that's absolutely, I think, how a lot of people would approach it, because they probably feel some sort of guilt or like
you know, maybe like shame or something. Like, and I think also there's like can be like some
there's a lot of shame,
self-hatred, like a little bit of like homophobia towards themselves. Absolutely. Biphobia towards themselves, where it's like, fuck, I have this secret, like I have to come clean.
For me, it was very like, oh, it's fine. Like, I didn't have a problem with gay people. I had a big problem with me being gay. And I could not, and I still don't fully understand it.
Yeah.
But like, I, that was a huge hurdle for me to get over. It was just like, I don't know, I still can't
less of yourself because of it.
It just felt like, it felt wrong. It felt like it was wrong. Or like, and it's weird because I don't have that feeling towards other people.
Well, yeah.
Like, I can't be like gay.
Look at the abortion issue, for example.
Yeah.
There's so many people out there who are like, oh, I'm fine if you want to get an abortion. I personally could never.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, I think, like something that when like someone's actually faced with it, if you are actually faced with questioning your sexuality, if you're actually faced with like a choice.
Well, it's also like when you're those things straight, you see like people's reactions to like that, and like you see like the ugliness, and it's like you don't want to feel that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be on the other side of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel for her because this is a tough thing, and it's like that's why I'm cheering her on, because like it's a tough thing to navigate through.
It's,
and like
it's rough.
Arrive there, and it's good. It's so good that you know that about yourself. But like, yeah, this is a,
and it is a revelation. It's a good revelation versus kind of some sort of kind of dark secret coming to the surface. Mm-hmm. It's just like you've opened up this other part of yourself. I mean, it's awesome. So hopefully, your husband would share in that joy.
This is two versions.
And I love being queer now. Like, it's a huge part of my identity. Like, it is a part of who I am. And I really love that side of myself, but it took me a long time to get there.
Yeah. I was going to say there's like two New York Times opinion pieces versions of this story.
Yeah.
And there's one where it's like, I told my husband I was bisexual and like he left me. And then there's like the version where it's like, I threw my husband a brunch to announce I was bisexual. Yeah. And like there was, you know, there was like fucking fruit and sausage and like blah, blah, blah. And I did like, you could do the whole fucking thing. Like there's two versions of this. And I think there's a real middle ground where it's like coming in and being like, hey, I discovered something about myself. Like, let's discuss this. I don't think like, because in my mind, I imagined it how I think that I took it at first, like with my own bias, where I was like, this is going to have to be a sit down that's serious, where like there might even be a we need to talk beforehand, you know? And like I think I took it in a way that you kind of presented it, which is like, how do I do this? And maybe it's much lighter than that, you know? But like there's definitely, those are two. Think of the opinion piece, honey. Think of your opinion piece when you explain this, you know? How would you want to read that in the New York Times? I think that that's a good approach.
Yeah.
That will be a piece, by the way. Someone throwing like a brunch to announce their bisexual to their husband.
I love a bisexual brunch.
Yeah. 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 There, that would have a lot of takes on Twitter. I'm already excited. Guys, write your takes
what
for that.
What would they serve?
Your Twitter. That's what I'm saying. Is like there'd have to be a whole, like,
it'd
remember on Full
sweet
House?
And savory.
When, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Sausage and fruit. But like, I'm saying that I think
oysters
that it would be
and hot dogs.
Exactly.
The basic buy brunch.
Basic quick buy brunch.
Fried oysters and hot dogs.
Oh wait, actually, this is funny because I did want to do something with you guys today where we talk about our dream like day, our top to end, beginning to end day meal, last day of our life meal.
I took notes on that.
But I also wanted to say this is very similar to the episode of Full House where Aunt Becky had to tell Jesse that she was pregnant with a baby. And so she gave baby corn, baby tomatoes, baby blah, blah, blah. And then that's how she told him she was pregnant, you know?
Just make a playlist with Janelle Monáe on it. Mm-hmm.
Or DMX and Janelle Monáe. Do you know what I mean? You got to get the aggressive male energy out, and then you got to have the light Janelle Monáe energy. Yeah. That's
the Janelle Monáe was more of the pansexual of it all.
Sure.
Like
but
some David Bowie.
I think we need to. Okay. Do you want to just do an all bisexual playlist?
Yeah.
You don't want to. Okay. I was thinking more the duality of it, but that's fine. Yeah. Do you want to talk our dream meals?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
And then we have a letter.
Okay. So this is like something I've been thinking about. We can all take our turns. Maybe we'll do Ted's first because everybody has good snacks. And then
we'll do a letter and then you and I will take turns. I want to know, Ted, if this was your last day on Earth or if you had a day where calories did not matter, what would be your breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Okie dokie. First, I should preface this by saying I have the palate of a 9-year-old. I don't have... Well, listen, I don't really not like any food except marzipan.
Yeah, we know that. You and I both hate marzipan.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that.
There was a
I love marzipan. All food from around the world, but this is going to be, you know, pretty low-level stuff here because it's just, it's how I want it on that day, on this day. I would start off my breakfast with French toast and a waffle, bacon, sausage links, scrambled eggs, a fresh ripe mango, strong coffee with half and half, a vanilla latte, a bear claw from Bob's Donuts from the farmer's market.
Wait, should we do all of our breakfasts first and then do lunch?
I am like still wrapping my head around
this
question.
Keep going. This is so good, Ted. Okay.
And a sweet roll from the Frontier restaurant in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
What is that like?
It's very basic, but they bring it to you. It's just a pat of butter on top. It's just this big old sweet roll. It's not huge.
Is it like a cinnamon roll?
Yeah, cinnamon
roll. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's delicious.
I've got a cinnamon roll on mine, too.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
It's so good. Is that all your breakfast?
Yeah, pretty much. That's okay. My breakfast.
Do you want to do your breakfast or do you want me to go?
You can go.
Okay, I'm going to have to kick it off with some Eggs Benedict, okay? Then I'm going to need a side of well-done bacon. I'm also going to need some mixed berries, but not blackberries in there, just raspberries, strawberries, and blueberries. Then I'm going to need like half of a Belgian waffle with real melty butter and then also whipped cream and strawberries on the side, but then real maple syrup. It has to be, you guys.
Mrs. Butterworth,
do you know that there's people out there who have never had real maple syrup and what a crime that is? There's people that think that Aunt Jemima is real maple syrup.
Like yeah. It because they're so used to the like corn syrupy maple, quote unquote, syrup.
Yeah, that's really sad.
Quick side note, when I worked a job in, I was a messenger in New York for many years, but I worked with a lot of guys and one of them was kind of a health nut and he did that maple syrup, cayenne, lemon juice cleanse, you know?
Yeah.
And he was telling us about it. Another guy who was older and not really wise to the fact was like, came in like after the weekend, was like, I tried that maple syrup cleanse, just gave me the run. And he'd been using like Log Cabin or, you know, so basically he was just like a corn syrup cleanse, you know, like just
I know.
Terrible. Anyway, sorry.
That makes me so sad.
Yeah, it was.
He must have had a terrible weekend.
Yeah.
Not, but also it's so sad to just like, I hate it. I hate people. Like,
yeah.
It makes me so sad to think this man's like, I'm going to try that. Like that guy at work that was doing this, like, probably secretly admires him or is like, maybe like, wow, if I could just get my life in control like Dan. And then he comes in drinking Aunt Jemima all weekend. It's just sad. That actually really makes me so sad.
If I were to go into more detail about these specific characters, you would even be more sad. But it was not.
That really hits me, Ted.
It was a bummer. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. Because I'm going
to
get
but let's get back to that breakfast.
Carafe of fresh squeezed orange juice with pulp because I'm an adult.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, what is with you? Are you a pulp or no pulp?
I mean, if it's fresh squeezed, give it to me.
Yeah, a little pulp. Yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
If I'm going to buy like a carton of Tropicana, I'm not a pulp guy.
Yeah, I feel that.
Which
I understand.
I'm not really going to buy a carton of Tropicana at this stage of the game, though. But
I wouldn't go hard. I think when I was a kid, I would have liked an extra pulp almost. You know, like I want to get that orange
just
in there.
Orange.
No.
Yes.
No, because that's not going to put me to sleep. I used to drink a glass of orange juice every night to go to sleep, which now I realize I was just sugar bombing myself.
Yeah, but then, well,
yeah,
know.
It would fucking work every night, baby.
Not only that, but you're leaving that acid on your teeth.
Probably. But, you know, I'm fine. I only have 2 cavities, so that's fine. But yeah, every night, pass out with a little Oge. I still like it. Like if I wake up in the middle of the night and I'll just take a quick shot of Oge. I love that. It really does feel good.
Nice.
And then I'm going to need a big iced espresso, like 3-4 shots with some 2% milk, as well as a pot of hot coffee. I also want an everything bagel scooped out with vegetable cream cheese. Mm. That's the shit right there. And then I want capers and red onion and tomato on the side of that. And I think I'm just going to take bites of that alternating until it's time for lunch. What about you, Christina?
I was thinking of, like, if we didn't care about the calories, why are you scooping out the...
Because then you get more cream cheese in it, bitch. Mm-hmm. And it's when it's more crunchy.
Okay. So
that was your note, like, on my breakfast, was why am I scooping out my bagel?
I was just curious. Why are you minding your business? If we don't care about the calories, why are you scooping out
well,
the bagel?
If you're,
sometimes there's a bread cheese or bread meat ratio that's very important to me.
This is a woman who wouldn't even tell me what's breakfast cereal she ate. Do you see how she's come at me with both my opinion on Janelle Monáe? Shocked that Christina's questioning my musical taste, first of all.
No.
Secondly...
It's a lot of fair weather Janelle Monáe fans.
Secondly, right, asking me if I scoop out my why I would scoop. Why are you questioning me about this? These are my preferences.
Because my thing is like if we're I was just trying to understand like why Look, would you scoop it out if we didn't care about
I don't
the
have a cookie cutter a brain. Question. Okay. My brain is not a cookie cutter.
Head, yes, so
I am not a paper doll. I have my own wild opinions, my own whims.
She just wants to make sure you're maximizing your joy. Yeah. That's all. You're not cutting corners.
This
for
is my deathbed, okay? I run my deathbed, okay?
No questions asked.
Yeah, I'm not going to grill you when we get to the Crispix portion of your.
That's fine.
No, I do love Crispix. Keep going.
I have this quiche that I make. It's a ham and cheese quiche.
Mm-hmm.
That's like an egg. It's
I didn't
really
see
nice.
Anyone popping off with a quiche, and I love this.
Yeah, I love
this
it.
Is a great game.
It's a really great quiche. Pancakes, I think. I love pancakes.
What kind?
Just plain
butter,
yeah. Some syrup. Butter on them, some mm-hmm. syrup. I've made pancakes with like coconut milk before, and that's been really good. It's like a different texture.
Stack size, thickness of the cake.
3, not too big, just normal, like picturesque.
I like a silver dollar.
I used to love silver dollars.
Wow,
as a kid.
Yeah,
that's good. Feels rich.
Yeah.
bacon. Chorizo breakfast potatoes, which I really love.
Ooh.
If you had like make them with chorizo, it's really good. Hot coffee and a mimosa. Pretty.
That's forward. Bright. I didn't think of the mimosa or honestly the hash brown. I
a
love
coffee and a mimosa is like a nice buzz, a nice caffeinated buzz.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I don't love to start my day with booze though. I've realized that. I actually think I hate mimosas, but I do like the idea of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's take our letter. And everyone think about your lunch in the meantime. I'm so excited for lunch. My fictional lunch. I've been thinking about this for 2 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hope this isn't too long. My boyfriend and I have been together for a little over 4 years. I'm 23, he's 24. And we live in a city where rents are really, really high. I was recently laid off from my job and we have no success and I've had no success finding a new one. He works from home several days a week and hates that the days he does have to go in. We both have studio apartments, but he stays over mine 99% of the time. Not having a job has been another huge stressor for me, as I was on the precipice of becoming financially independent from my parents before I got laid off. The job struggle has made me feel kind of worthless as I send out tons of job apps but hear nothing back. I'm trying to be productive by working on my own artistic endeavors, but writing your screenplay in trendy cafes can get expensive. That leaves us both stressed out. What did
Sorry.
You say?
I said go to the library.
That leaves us both stressed out in my apartment, never more than 10 feet away from each other. Recently, we've been fighting a lot. What starts as an argument over who's doing the dishes or forgetting their keys can span into an hour or days long fight. I am always feeling like the loser of the fight, and though I know I am wrong sometimes, he readily admits that he's a good arguer. He readily admits that he's a good arguer and doesn't help. We're planning on moving in together later this year and are hoping that with lower rent and a few rooms in the apartment, we will at least be we will be less at each other's throats. But in the meantime, how do two chronically anxious and currently stressed people coexist when the space is tight? Please advise. By the way, I'm a Libra Sun, Taurus Moon, Pisces rising. He's a Gemini sun, I think Virgo moon, and a Sag rising. We both have Taurus and Venus. That's it.
Well, that's his Virgo arguing. But this is unhealthy. What the fuck? He has a studio apartment. You guys are still at the same studio apartment all the time, angry with each other. Why aren't you going to the library, first of all? Like, the idea of someone writing in a trendy cafe is, like, kind of bullshit. Like, that's...
But it's also if you're people, struggling to pay your rent, like, what are you doing?
That's what I'm saying is, like, why... Like, it's all, like, what do you think's going to happen at the cafe where you're spending your money on lattes, I guess, right? What do you think? What do you think you're going to meet another writer there? Go to the fucking library where they actually have books and you can like use stuff there and it's free. You can like leave and smoke a cigarette and no one's going to steal your computer. It's the goddamn library. Like, I don't understand what you're doing. I don't get it. And why is this? I think it's very dumb to take a gamble on a lease with someone that you really aren't getting along with well. And if you feel like you're walking into arguments already the loser, like, there's a power dynamic there that's really fucked up, and he's preying on it. Basically, when he admits, like, I'm good at arguing, like, he's preying on your power dynamic. I think that's really shitty.
It also is kind of shitty for someone to be like, yeah, I may be wrong, but I'm good at arguing, so I'm going to keep arguing my point.
It's just yeah, that bullying.
Doesn't, that's like a level of self-awareness that doesn't help the relationship at all. There's no empathy there. But I would say that, okay, you know, maybe you're comfortable going to the cafe that you go to that's your process, but you can change that process. But also, they both have apartments, correct?
They're throwing money away every month.
Go, you know, he should go to his apartment to do his work.
Yeah,
like go to his, you know,
that's his office.
That's where you work, and then you know you each work at your own apartments. Or you know, I've lived this. I mean, my wife and I moved to. After 20 years in New York, moved to LA 5 years ago, and I started working. We both were working from home, and you know we've been married for close to 20 years, but we're living in a place that only has one extra room, so it's really hard. You know, it's hard. It doesn't, you know, to be in each other's space and not have a lot of space is can be very challenging, and so you have to actively figure out a way around that. You know, whether it be he goes to his place or you have to be proactive and figure that stuff out because it's just, it's landmines. It becomes landmines.
And
everywhere.
Like both of you are renting a studio apartment. Like you didn't mention if there's a rent difference or anything else, but that's basically money that's being thrown away. Sorry. That's basically money that's being thrown away every single month what's going on? Why can't he get out of that lease? If you guys are already basically, are you using it as a storage unit of sorts? Like, why do you both have studio apartments? It just seems like such a massive waste of cash to me. And it might be cheaper to just break that lease and to get into a new apartment. But I don't know if things like sound ideal enough for you guys to, I wouldn't take this further out on wheels. Like, I would try and say like, let's maybe like get this part normal between us, the everyday living part before we move in. Cause hoping that more doors is going to make a difference is a very,
you just get to be mad at each other in different rooms now.
Right. Right. Right.
That's it. That's the only thing that's going to change.
And I will say that like my mom was always a big believer in the idea of like, there's a reason why, because like, I think that when, you know, in her marriage, she felt that we're very Irish. We like to do our own thing and like are very like kind of like solo beings inside the house. My stepdad's family was Greek and like they're very much like we're in a living room right now at my house with like two chairs and two small couches. The entire five of them would be on this couch if they had their like choice. Do you know what I mean? They're very fucking close. And my mom, that was like a big challenge for her. And she would always say like, there's a reason why homes have walls and doors. Like they need to respect that. Like when I go into one room, they can't all follow me into it.
there's like, if you have that personality, I don't understand how people manage it. I really don't. Like, to live in a small place, knowing that there's tension 10 feet from you. I don't like anyone else in my whole ass house when I'm feeling introverted. Like, I don't want them in any other room. I don't want someone to be in my driveway when I'm upset. I like to be very much alone. So there is something to say for like just the idea of like walls and doors to begin with. But I have a friend that was like who lived in a studio apartment in New York, and in their marriage, they lived in this apartment. And I barely understood how they, like, I've lived in studios. It was similar to the size of my studio, or my bachelor apartment in Koreatown.
Okay.
Do you remember that? It was like one room and then a kitchen and a bathroom.
Yeah.
Or not even a kitchen. It was like a closet and a bathroom. Yeah. It was just a fridge, a mini fridge with a microwave on top of it. There wasn't even a sink. So, basically, like, it was that size. And she was, like, upset. She said something like about her marriage only lasting 5 years. And I was like, I wouldn't have lasted 5 months. Like, with always one person always having to be on, like, wireless speakers, and then the other person always, like, how do you do that? Especially if you don't really like if you really don't like a lot of the things about this person and the way that they interact in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that seems the Virgo thing. The arguing thing bums me out because, like, he's bullying you and he knows it. He's like, I can fucking out-talk you and I know it. And that's a skill to have, but it's another thing to admit it. Like, you know.
To the person that you're mostly arguing with.
I also know what I have thought about people, and I feel terrible saying this. I also know what I've thought about people that I could out-argue.
Yeah.
In relationships, mm-hmm. where I'm like, you're not that fucking bright. So I can run circles around
you. And that's the thing. It's like, if the goal is to win the argument, you're not really getting to the point of like talking about your feelings. It's
right.
Like, it's not a productive thing. You're just.
Well, you're not. Yeah. You have. I mean, you're lacking empathy if you can't kind of put yourself in the person's shoes that you're arguing with. And
you're not doing any active listening.
Yeah.
Like, you're not hearing each other.
It's just about like canceling them out.
I hate it when this is like the breakup with your boyfriend show, but like I do think that this is a really Wags
is already
Ted brought a Wags a pig, and he's acted
already,
out on the pig.
He's already possessive of it. I was gonna say Ted. That's
a big, Wags,
a good
don't
thing.
Bite Ted.
That means he likes it.
Does Olive do that? Would she ever snarl at a guest who gave her a present?
No.
No.
But
yeah.
She would snarl at their cat.
Yeah, Wags had balls for 5 years, so I think that like some of that is in there. He had his balls for five years. I didn't get him neutered for 5 years.
Ah, okay.
Because I was like, well, who's he gonna fuck? It's just us. Like, I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't bring myself to do it, and I knew I don't know what it was. I felt like bad. I felt bad neutering him, and then finally I did, and I think he's still got a little bit of that aggro spirit inside of him.
Yeah.
Wags.
Hey, I reached for
Ted,
the pig.
Ted gave you the pig, Wags. I'm going to take it. Oh, now you're... Oh, see, this is a really interesting Moody's in today. I don't know. I don't like this. I think that, like, you should really reconsider this whole thing before you sign a lease, because it's very expensive to break one, and just because... Is this a person that... I heard someone say recently that they like knew their husband was the one because it was, she's like, I don't think it would be a pain in the ass to divorce him. And she's like, I think that he would be very like easy to divorce.
Ugh.
Like he wouldn't put up a big deal about it. We could go through that together. And
good Lord.
I know that that's a crazy way to think about things, but with the lease, like I would ask you if you had to end this lease, would he be a monster about it? Because that you don't have any sort of ties to each other. You're not like married. You're not engaged. You don't have any reason to work through this necessarily if shit hits the fan. If you guys sign this year lease and then 9 months in, something happens, do you think he's someone that like just bedroom doors would be enough that you'd be able to live out the rest of this lease? Because sometimes that happens. Like I had to live out part of the end of a lease with an ex-boyfriend and it was really bad. Like... Because he was very angry because I was the one who like was like, I can't do this anymore. And so he was very angry and it was very difficult to live with him.
Mm-hmm.
So just consider that. Like it already seems like you guys have this like tension.
Yeah.
Can he ever go spend three nights a week at his house? Like, why don't you guys try that? Three nights at his house. Maybe you guys will appreciate each other more.
I do think you need to, like, get this situation sorted out before you move in with each other. That's ultimately the best advice I can give to summarize this call and this letter in a neat
I'm package. Preoccupied also with the waste of the money that's going into the studio. Because, like, she's broke and he's, like, kind of living at her place. And wasting this money.
For, like, your groceries and, like, helping you out with your electric.
Because, like, he's driving up your – exactly. He's driving up your utilities and, like, he could help make your life a little bit easier. Yeah. I understand that, like, you probably enjoy having him at your house too.
It says a lot if he hasn't at least offered.
Right. You guys have to practice, like, boundaries. Because it sounds like it's easy to not have any. It's so easy in a relationship to not have any boundaries, especially if you guys are getting along really well at first. But I think, like, maybe testing out some fucking boundaries, like just him staying at his house a little bit more often, might be smart. You'll feel like the tension is really a lot for me to think about. Having someone mad at you 10 feet away in your own house that you're also, like, in a relationship with, like, that's a lot.
Yeah. It's huge.
And that's mental chaos for you. Like, as Absolutely. Someone who's broke and needs to earn your money, like, you need to be, like, writing and being creative and, like, I don't know. These are the things that they've existed in my life, I've assumed that they weren't the problem, but they were, like, the only problem, you know? They were, like, the main problem. And then once that was gone, I was, like, in the most creative and, like, ready to work place of my life. Breakups are really good. For creativity, just saying. So if that happens, maybe this isn't the end of the world. I'm like, what are you doing at a cafe? Get a library card. It's so nice.
You don't even need the card to be at the library.
Exactly. You just walk in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Oh, but if you're gonna commit a crime, don't Google anything.
Yeah.
There.
Don't
Don't Google anything there. Or that's how they're gonna get you.
If you do,
you can't Google how to murder someone. Name. Right. Right. Yeah.
Wear sunglasses.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm trying to think of, like, who the best alias to use would be, like, if you wrote about it. Or if you – yeah, like, you'd have to go buy a new outfit and then throw it out so they could never track your, like, hoodie or whatever it was you wore. You'd have to
buy the outfit in cash.
Yes. And you'd probably want
to
buy it.
And you'd have to take that cash out, like, way before.
Yeah.
Like, you intend to buy the outfit.
You know where I'd go? I'd go down to Venice Boulevard where they've got vendors selling the same, all sorts of the same sunglasses, all sorts of the same thing.
SpongeBob parody t-shirt.
Yeah, I'd go buy a pair of red clout goggles from one guy, walk down the boardwalk a little bit, buy a plain nondescript sweatshirt from another person.
Maybe Rasta a little Bart Simpson t-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you throw them off with a little, like, hobby accessory, like a puka shell. Or maybe you get, like, a broken Fitbit off Craigslist or something, make them think you're really, like, working on your fitness or something. Hit me up. Call us with your disguises. 3-2-3-4-5-0.
I was just going to say, like, make sure your car has enough gas to get to and from the west side because you don't want to stop for gas somewhere in the west side. And then that's how they pin that you were in the west side.
Yeah. Oh, no, for
Start
sure.
Start a crime stash of money now.
Like, yeah.
You know.
Guys, free advice.
You know, start your just crime some cash right you can now. Keep to the side.
Yeah. But,
you know,
take it to
years.
Any your Coinstar money. You can use your Coinstar money.
Absolutely.
That's perfect because no one's tracking Coinstar money. And you can collect that really slow and easy. Do it in small bursts. You know, they will ding you with a fee. But I think that's foolproof.
Yeah,
that's foolproof.
Coinstar.
Okay.
Coinstar.
All right. Do you guys want to do our
last call?
No, our food.
Oh,
lunch.
Yeah, sorry.
Let's do lunch. Okay. What's your lunch, Ted?
I got to think about mine again.
My lunch is a series of pizzas.
Mm.
I'm going to have a New York style pizza with pepperoni. So it's kind of a softer crust, lots of cheese. I'm going to have a brick oven pizza with pineapple, ham, and jalapeno, and a deep dish pizza with sausage, black olive, green pepper, and onion, and a pitcher of ice cold root beer.
Oh, that's delicious. Ice cold root beer.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to start out with two slices of cheese pizza from Cafe Aventura, which is the pizza place next to the Newbery Comics in the garage in Harvard Square. I think that maybe
it's owned by new people. I know it is owned by new people now, but I want to go back to those owners and get those two pieces of pizza. Then I want like a dozen chilled lobster claws with drawn butter.
Mine is lobster related as well.
Right. And then, well, I have lobster at dinner too, for sure. But I want like a dozen, like kind of like chilled lobster claws that I can just take my time with over the meal. They're so, that's the best part of the lobster. Fucking best with drawn butter. And then I want to do like a Mediterranean salad with like cucumbers and tomato and onion and like a really nice easy dressing. I could just like eat that like soup. And then one of my mom's tuna fish sandwiches. And then a ham and cheese with provolone and spicy mustard and like chopped pickles on a bulky roll from this place in Needham called Cowtails. And think that's it for lunch. Oh, and then for my drink, I guess I think I want a Diet Coke. And also, yeah, I want a Diet Coke. And then also maybe a chocolate milk.
Mm.
Okay.
Nice.
I'm so gross.
Okay. What do you want?
So there used to be this place in Silver Lake called Knuckle and Claw, and they had a really good lobster roll.
Oh, I love that.
And so I would want two lobster rolls from Knuckle and Claw. Somehow we can resurrect the business. But they also put recipes online for like their blend, for their butter blend.
Yeah.
It was delicious. And they would get like freshly baked rolls from like Rockweiler and or there's some bread company on the west side. But it was so delicious, and and they used the good part of the lobster, the claw, and the knuckle and stuff like that. So it was really just succulent and amazing.
Do you know people don't know that there's meat? I had someone say to me that they didn't even know that there was meat in the claws and in the knuckle. And I'm like, what have you been doing?
I know. That's like they wasted
and the
how much lobster.
The tail's like not that great.
It's like fine.
The tail's just fine for me.
Yeah.
Not much. But I'll take one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love it.
For a drink, I just want an ice cold red birch beer.
Ah.
Boylan makes a really good red birch beer.
Yeah, that's classic. Oh my God, that's classic. Wow.
It's simple.
That's some real.
Love it.
Since my breakfast is heavy, so.
Oh my God, I love that. Okay, do you want to do our last call and then dinner and then close out? I care more about the food than I care about these people. I'm so sorry, guys.
Hi. Everybody, I just forgot all of your names. My brain just stopped, and I listen to your show all the time. Malls, Christina Wax, got it. I have a question that is not very serious, but it popped in my head again today, which is I also listen to Mother May I Sleep With podcast. Big fan. I'm curious. My question is, what is the logo image that's on Mother May I Sleep With podcast? Because every time I look at it, it looks like an ass. And it could be in the sign. I'm just really, I realize it's not like a Rorschach test, but it feels like it. And I'm on the subway and I'm listening to the podcast and I look down and I sometimes wonder if people think that I'm like looking at cartoonish porn, which I understand is a fetish for some people, not myself specifically. So I wanted to know if it is an ass. I'm also assuming that maybe it has something to do with Mother May I Sleep With Angels, so maybe I should just Google what that VHS cover looks like. But wondering if there's a backstory that I'm not aware of. So that would be a really nice fact to have. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, allow me to spill the tea. So that logo, we are not using it right now. We moved to a more red and blue one because I want to sort of rebrand. For some reason, I'm so red and blue are always my colors. And so we have it for Please Advise. We have it now for Mother May I Sleep With podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, Ted is now red and blue. Like, yeah, with he's holding the red mic. Obviously, I have the blue one. You guys all know. But
yeah, hell will break loose if she doesn't get the blue one.
So Christina like tried to like fucking change it on me. Like she tried to put like the and I was like, you're so dumb. Like you think I wouldn't know my son? Like come on now.
I was changing the foam because it had so much Wags hair on it. I was like, we need a refresh.
No, not when you change this. It was you put my blue sock on the red mic's
base. And I was like, you think I don't know my child? Like, what the fuck? Like, you think I wouldn't know my kid in the lineup? So, no. So here's the deal with that logo. So that was made by Molly Mae McMahon, who's like a great artist. And she fabulously reached out to me and said she wanted to do our logo. And I said to her, girl, she's like, she does all sorts. It is a Rorschach test, by the way. So basically she does like all sorts of fabulous art that has to do. I mean, like a lot of it is, I guess, related to the female figure. And I said, just like go wild. Like, what is your interpretation of this? And she sent me basically that image. And then we were going through color combinations. And originally it was just going to be plain black and white. But then she was like, I feel like the peach is really pretty and emphasizes like all of the possibilities in it and look really good on a Heather Gray t-shirt if you decided to do that. So that was our logo for the first two seasons. I love it because it was – people were always like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, what is
– I remember when you sent it to me. I was like, Molly, what is this?
What does it have to be though? Do you know what I mean? Like I also like it because it's very much like to me – like what the podcast is, which is just fucking weird. Like it's whatever you want it to be. It's different every week. It's like, yeah. So that's what that was. It is. It's like, it looks like boobs. It looks like an ass. It looks like a mother and child. It looks like just a, like that, like almost like a Lego version of it. It's very interesting. There's everything in there. And also the best part is flip it over on every side. It's very interesting. But I love that you asked that. Let's get to, and by the way, Ted's like my favorite guest. I think I just openly say that now on Mother May I Sleep a podcast. Okay.
Oh, wow.
I do. Okay. I just say it. Well, come on. come on. We're just like best friends. Like Ted, I've practically found on the street. So let's do our dinner. Ready?
Yeah, I'm writing mine down.
Ready for like, dinner?
Oh, dinner. Okay.
Yeah.
Dinner.
Wait, I still need to finish.
I found Ted on the street. Okay, let's go. I did, and I found him on Twitter.
Yeah, I was hiding. I was hiding my Hydro Flask in the bush up front.
This has been going. Ted has been planning this for years. Back. Little did
Bring
I know.
It back.
I would dinner. I would start with a wedge salad.
Oh, so good.
And a shrimp cocktail.
My thing is like, fuck vegetables. I'm not like, I don't have to give a shit about vegetables this day, but yeah.
Right.
Have a wedge salad, you'll see, you know, iceberg lettuce, and that's about it with some blue cheese dressing and bacon. Mm-hmm. None of it makes sense. That's okay. It's my stomach. Shrimp a barbecued, a pulled pork sandwich. And then cheese enchiladas, half green chili, half red chili, refried beans on the side, a basket of sopapillas with honey on the side, and probably an ice cold beer. And for dessert, a peanut butter parfait from Dairy Queen.
Oh, that is so good.
That's pretty good.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's so good. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now my heart is ablaze. I want a cheese and charcuterie off the top. That better be there when I arrive. I want the cheese and wherever I'm going for this. Then I want literally unlimited shrimp. I want like a whole cold like seafood platter where it's oysters from Duxbury, Mass, where I spent my summers. I want fucking endless shrimp and I want more lobster claws. Then I want to do brisket. So many collard greens, like the real legit collard greens. And then none of this like LA barbecue shit. I want to go to Black's Barbecue in Austin, my personal favorite barbecue. And I also want beans and I want mac and cheese and I want potato salad. Then I want oh my God, why am I blanking? Oh, I want this chicken basil pasta from this restaurant in Needham, Massachusetts that I can't remember right now. I also want the chicken parm from Mario's in Lexington, Mass. And I want the veal parm from Had Dad's in Brant Rock, Massachusetts. Then I'm going to have to hit him with I want a pitcher of beer as well as a really nice red and a really nice Sauvignon Blanc because I'm going out big. I'm never going to see the light of day again, so who knows? I also want a really nice ice cold Coca-Cola with that and a huge pitcher of unsweetened iced tea.
And then I want to wrap it up with a huge pint of mocha almond ice cream from Brigham's in Massachusetts and tons of Jimmy's on it and also a banana split from Friendly's. and that's about it for my dinner.
Love it.
Yeah, and then maybe a little bit more charcuterie before bed.
And a shot of OJ.
Yeah, a little shot of, and then a shot of fresh squeezed OJ. And then I'll see you in heaven. What are you going to have?
I feel like mine is so basic compared to both of yours. Because it, like, it's just
we just
meal?
Had, like, fat people's no judgment. Pass out. Like, okay. This is just
it's
anything.
Like, this is your joy moment. Okay.
So the first thing is, like, I'm going to have a drink. It's going to be a Tito's martini with a lemon twist shaken because you get the nice, like, ice chips mm-hmm. in there.
Mm. I like that.
An ice cold martini is so good.
Mm-hmm.
So then I want a shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
We are all shrimp people
we
here.
We can shit. Yeah.
We're, yeah.
Yep.
And then I also want dinner rolls made out of, there's this really good bread that they make in Puerto Rico called pan de agua. It's just really delicious. I love it. I love bread. It's my favorite kind of bread. So I want dinner rolls. I love bread. So I want dinner rolls made out of pan de agua there. And then I want like a T-bone steak, like medium rare.
Mm-hmm.
Mashed potatoes.
Sorry, I'm getting
this
lost.
This is just like a room reverie. Of food people. Like, I like don't even get to say, yes.
Some pans.
We're going to have this later. Like, yeah. That's how you and I are.
Yeah. This is a steakhouse meal, essentially.
Right.
So, pan-seared Brussels sprouts on the side. And then to finish it off, I want a pizzuki. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yeah, a pizza cookie.
It's a pizza cookie. It's a cookie you make in like a cast iron.
Oh, toilet. Yes.
So
oh.
Like a pizzuki with butter pecan ice cream on top.
Good Lord.
Wow. I love that. Butter pecan. That's good. Was Häagen-Dazs trending for you guys yesterday? I had a sponsored trend of Häagen-Dazs.
Yes, some new flavors.
They're
kind
all like all of their booze collection. And like, I was dying because I don't think I've seen like a real, I never like really clicked on a sponsored trend, but I was like, Häagen-Dazs, now you've got my eye. I just want to see what's up. So it's all like, it like bourbon, butter, pecan, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I realized how many people truly interact with like sponsored tweets.
It's wild.
And people just being like, Häagen-Dazs is amazing! Exclamation point. Hashtag new Häagen-Dazs flavors. And I just was like, lady, you don't have to do this. Like, I agree. Häagen-Dazs is great. My grandpa loved Häagen-Dazs. It was like one of the things I'll just remember. Every time I have it, I think of my grandpa.
My mom calls it Häagen-Dazs. And I'm like, mom, there's no H at the end of it. Please.
That's okay.
Stop.
That's like a mom thing, you know. My mom will like.
It's randomly, a made up word, so she can pronounce it any way she wants.
Right,
so.
I know, exactly. But it's also like when they do it like in a row repetitively. She's like, I just went down to the corner store and got some Häagen-Dazs. I love my Häagen-Dazs. You know, I love my chocolate Häagen-Dazs. And I'm like, mom, it's not. There's no.
My mom will decide randomly words she's always pronounced correctly. She'll just automatically just like. I remember one time she was like Patrick Swayze. And I was like, who? And she was like, Patrick Swayze. And I was like, what? And like, I was like 14. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, what? You've always known it's Patrick Swayze. You were the one who showed me Dirty Dancing. What the hell's going on? And I don't know what was happening in there, but sometimes she'll click over and just a new pronunciation will pop up. I don't think she always does it, but.
Oh, I'd love Häagen-Dazs. To hear that list.
Patrick Swayze.
Häagen-Dazs. 155.
Okay, so we got to wrap it up. Too many good meals. Thank you again, Ted, for being here. And also, he brought Wags the cutest pig. This is a really cute pig. It looks a little bit like Miss Piggy in the eyes. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having
Thanks
me.
Thanks for all the great tips. Thanks for the finish tips. I'll send you home with a couple individually packed ones for Julie. And Christina, love you.
Love you too, Mom.
Thanks to all of our callers. You guys really... I am on painkillers. That might be why today was weird. I just took a Vicodin for my tooth. Sorry. Right. So I was wondering, like, was it me? Is it the calls? It's me.
I have a question. Do you want people to tweet us their ideal meals?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm just going to be hungry. But
I'm just going to sit at home going,
Yeah, no, I love it. So good. Oh, cornichons forever, though. I need cornichons at every meal. Maybe not breakfast. Okay, bye, guys. Talk to you next week.